What's happening, weirdos? This and every episode of the Wednesday Show is brought to us by our friends at Charlotte's Web. Go to cwhemp.com, get yourself some calm hemp gummies, get 10% off with KeepItCrispy19 promo code at checkout. Guys, this is exciting for me. This is my last. I'm out of quarantine, actually. I'm now just back on the regular. For those of you that have been listening, I've been alone for 2 weeks. I went on a walk today in the fresh air, and it did not disappoint. There's so many things I don't think I'll take for granted, at least for a long while after this. So it's wonderful to be out. It's wonderful to be with you again, and it's wonderful to be with Justin Long, who is incredible. I'm sure you know. I've known Justin. We keep running into each other over the past, it feels like 10 years. I keep running into him, and every time is a delight. And this conversation is no exception. I do want to say there are a couple technical difficulties on the Wi-Fi's end. So you might hear a few glitches. Katie, the wonderful Katie, did her best, which means the best anyone could do, taking them all out. But you might hear a glitch or two, just so you know. It's not your connection. It was ours. This episode is brought to us by our friends at Foria. Did you know that according to research, men have 20 to 50% more orgasms as heterosexual women in partnered sexual encounters? 75% of women still experience painful sex at some point, and 80% still experience painful menstrual cramps. It doesn't have to be this way. Enter Foria, our newest Pete's Pick. With all the talk about embodiment and healthy sexuality, I'm happy for them to join our team. They are on a mission to close the pleasure gap. Foria was the first brand to create a comprehensive product line addressing the sexual and pleasure needs of women with CBD-enriched arousal oil, lubricant, and suppositories to help alleviate women's issues related to painful sex, menstrual cramps, and even postmenopausal issues. Better, easier, more wonderful orgasms, less pain. This is a good place. 100% plant-based and organic with zero fragrances, additives, or synthetics. No chemicals in or on you. This is not some anonymous cinnamon-flavored lube you buy at a truck stop sex shop. This is the best organic, natural stuff on the market. Val and I first tried them. We got some of the Awaken Arousal Oil after we did Nikki Glaser's show, Not Safe. We tried it, and it was an absolute game changer. These are plant allies here to help awaken and enrich your life. I think if you are looking to take female pleasure to the next level, that feeling of closeness and connection during sex, enhance arousal and access to orgasm, making great sex even better. Ease discomfort, supportive for soothing pain during sex, which unfortunately is so common. It's the best stuff we found. Absolutely a wonderful way, as I always say, to use our plant allies. Get something natural in your bedroom routine that's going to bring you into your body, bring you into the moment, and just take it to the next level. Foria is offering a very special offer for the weirdos. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/weird. That's F-O-R-I-A, foriawellness.com/weird for 20% off your order. As I always say, it's the best way to show your support of the show. So many people reach out wanting to express their gratitude. That's the best way. Do yourself a favor, get some Foria, and in the process, support this always free podcast. That's it, guys. I am so excited for you to hear this chat with my friend Justin. It was awesome. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Get into it. See, I'm excited to be in the wild again. I'm free.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Somebody call the fun police, because we're going to have to pull over two real chum boys. We're talking boys you want to ground up and attract sharks with, it because they're chum boys.
Well, this is not the podcast I was expecting, but I like it.
It's one of those riffy ones. I can hear you. I can't see you, which is...
Oh, but good. That's okay. Let's see. start for you.
Hey. Oh, look at this. This is the setup. This is a real podcast setup.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm in a trailer. You have a real great mic with a spit guard. You have egg crates on the wall.
Yeah. Wait, you're in a trailer?
Val and I got out of LA for a little bit. So we're up in
cool.
North, and we're basically in a trailer. And
I'm jealous. I'm buying. I found this company called Boho Camper Van. They take vans like Dodge, you know, those Dodge stand up vans.
Yeah.
And they convert them into RVs. So I just put the down payment down.
On the company.
I'm getting one.
Are you getting one of the
company,
vans?
Yeah, I'm buying the company now.
I thought you meant you were buying the company. Oh, I was like, Justin, no. Do you know? We just start recording right away. I hope this is okay. I don't know if you want to talk about your personal investment strategies on the air.
Oh, wow. You think I'm a much bigger baller.
I mean, it's fun to believe. I do. I think it's so fun. You know, first of all, thank you so much for doing this. I'm so happy to see you.
We just went right into it. Wait, Pete, okay. Should I be recording on my end?
That's up to Katie. What do you think, Katie? No harm.
Okay.
I say no harm.
Okay. It's really good to see you. Yeah.
It's great to see you. I want to start with a compliment, which is a very, very, very specific compliment. But when I was starting out, I booked a small part on one of the Mac ads, which I was so excited about. This was in New York. This was like, if you got an audition, it was like just such a big deal. You remember that feeling? I know you do.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Huge deal. And I'm not just buttering your bread. Those commercials were like known and still are as good, funny commercials. You know what I mean? Both you and John, it was sort of like premium stuff. So to be asked to audition for a campaign that you already knew and liked, and it turned out you film like, maybe you can speak to this, you'd film like 30 of them.
Uh-huh.
And then tell me what they would do. I mean, we'll get back to this sweet compliment.
Well, we shot, God, how many a day would we do? I mean, I would say 7-8 a day, maybe.
It was a lot.
My memory is so bad. John would remember better. Did you know John before?
I feel like
you guys knew each other.
I think I knew him a little bit, maybe from doing stand-up, maybe from UCB or something. But I remember... And this is what brought it to mind. I wasn't like, I got to ask Long about the Mac ads. I was like, this is about us and about how sweet you were. Is that like, it was a super, I'm not being false. It's still a big deal to talk to you. This is an exciting guest for me. But back then I was like, this is fucking nuts. Yeah. Like I was really, really juiced by it.
You have all, yeah, you've always been so earnest and sweet yourself. So I remember just thinking how easy and fun it was to, you know, always be around you. And I'm recalling two moments running into you on, you know, I call it the block, the Franklin Village area by UCB.
Yeah.
And, you have one of those faces that I always just love seeing, and
I look like a mascot of a very safe carnival.
Yeah, but there's something very inviting about it. I don't know if it's like a type of like a mascot. Like a type of pet, like a very kind, non-threatening. I don't know what the species would be, and I don't want to say.
I just was going to green light you and be like, I don't think you can offend me on this topic. The last podcast we did, I referred to my mouth as Hillary Swank mouth. So I know how I look, and Hillary Swank's a beautiful lady, but we both have specific types of mouths. But I think babies like big features, big eyes, big mouth. Big, and that might still be in play when you see my bobblehead going down to UCB and I pass you at the sidewalk restaurant there. You just want to say hi.
There's maybe a cartoonish quality. I feel this way a little bit about Dax Shepard. Like he has low fees, a pejorative sounding word, but like lumbery and.
I can say lumbering and loafy as a lumbering loaf myself. Me, Dax, and Zach Braff, I feel like should play brothers or cousins or something because there's a similar... Braff sort of starts to sexy it up a little bit more than I like. Meaning he's sort of escaped the gene pool enough to dry off and start flirting with the girls by the pool.
But see, I think you've also you've gotten comfortable. Like you said, like you can't insult me. That's interesting you say that. You can't say anything that you would find... Because you've lived with your... that appearance, whatever it is, however someone feels about it long enough that you, you are very secure. And I think that's another reason why I have always been drawn to you. I don't get the sense of, and you can speak to this better, but that comedian's insecurity. I mean, it's a very
sweet,
palpable thing with a lot of comedians, that they need to be on and, you know, top a joke that somebody else has said and keep the ball in the air. And there's this kind of, it can cause a little bit of anxiety, I think, if you're...
For sure. You got to get that balance just right. First of all, that's very sweet. But second of all, that sort of brings us back to what I was saying, which was when I was on the set, I'm broken up, aren't I?
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Okay. You did. All right.
Where did you lose me?
I heard this. I saw this, which brings me back to when I was on the set. And, okay, about 5 seconds, and I knew those were 5 key seconds. I knew it was like, God, maybe like a really nice compliment or like something even profound, and I was losing it.
Katie, go ahead and leave that glitch in. Sometimes real is better. I do want to say,
frozen kind mascot.
I want to say, I can tell you're hosting a podcast. This is already a pleasure and a delight, but you're doing that podcasty thing. So go ahead and plug it. It's called.
Oh, whatever.
Just say it.
But by the way, a podcast.
Just tell people what it's called. Just.
You know, doesn't that sound like the name of something that might now be a podcast? It's called Life Short. I don't have time naming. I don't know how you felt, but I do it with my brother Christian, and we could not come up with a title. We went back and forth so long about that, and then like, should it be a pun? Should it be? Is that too cutesy? Is that too? Should it be straightforward? Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the straightforward marketing advice, and let's get into this, because this isn't a good idea, what I'm about to say, but I feel like you had to be like, do we call it going long?
That definitely came up. I'm sure.
And yeah. I was curious. Long-winded. Oh, that's good. That's good.
But the company that I do it with, Wondery, they felt that would be, and rightly so, this is why they're a smart company, and I'm not. They thought it would be too self-effacing. It was like,
well, it's disparaging.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, if whoever didn't know me or know that my last name was Long, you know, you don't want to listen to a podcast called Long.
I thought about this because I thought it might be a key into your childhood and what it was like growing up. Obviously, my name is Holmes. That has its own like, what's up, Holmes? That didn't start until, I feel like, the late 80s, really late 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
Now everybody knows, but Long, and I'm not trying to be funny here, any name that rhymes with dong, you know what I'm saying? Can we just talk? Tell me what it was like growing up with the name.
Okay, I will. Well, certainly in high school it began Schlong, J.J. Schlong, and to this day, of course in high school it's like, you're insecure about it. At least I was. I was so insecure and struggling with like. Now somebody calls me Schlong, it's like I'd laugh at it, or at worst I'd be indifferent to it. You know, it's like, oh, okay, Schlong. It's kind of. But in high school, I remember being bothered by it.
Schlong. Nobody wants Schlong. Sounds big. I suppose if you want a big old wanger, you want a Schlong.
Right. Well,
it also definitely sounds unwashed. Oh, I saw a Schlong.
Well, I was so small. I don't mean necessarily my penis, but my penis was probably small because my whole body was small.
Yeah.
And I hadn't gone through puberty until it began senior year of high school. And I think I had real hangups about like the bigger kid. Everyone was bigger than me. And they would say, so everything to me took on a condescending tone, like that, a name like Schlong.
So funny.
But unless it was said by somebody I liked, this is interesting. I never thought about it.
This goes back to me saying you can't offend me. It's not just because of who you are, and I mean this as a compliment. There's one of the things that's appealing about you is there's a simpatico in the I can't think of a better way to say it than a woundedness. There's a vulnerability to you that when you, forgive me, but you're a good looking guy,
Forgiven.
But there's some good looking people that it becomes a wall because they don't have the wound. They don't have the vulnerability. John Hamm has the wound. There's something in Hamm's eyes that it's like, you got picked on, didn't you? You know what it's like to be, to stick up for a bully, don't you? And you have that. But if you were just like a big schlonger that was mean, you could be the same guy and it maybe would hurt my feelings. So you're saying some people would say schlong.
That's interesting, Pete. Yeah, I wonder because it's funny that you say that. I always brace myself a little bit whenever someone pays me a compliment, which is obviously nice to say you're a good looking, to compliment my appearance, I always brace myself for the, the qualification of it.
Yes. You're comedy hot or you're like, you're the goofy best friend. Well, you're in Hollywood. You're the goofy best friend good looking, or you're the hacker good looking.
Right. And exactly. And I don't think
any of that, by the way.
Well, I never thought of myself as this is going to sound vain and arrogant, but I never thought of myself as being a good looking person until recently. And I don't mean me now. I mean, like occasionally now I'll look at old movies I was in or old photos, you know, from something and think and have this thought, which is, I was good looking.
Yeah.
Not always.
But Judd has a bit about that where he's like, you look at old photos of yourself and you're like, it's like your goal weight. You're like, my God, I wish I looked like that. If I had known that that's what I looked like. But you need to be you now to know. I look at old photos of me and I'm like, look at his jawline. Like he's so svelte or whatever it is. Yeah, and I know that kid thought he was softer and lumbery and
oh my
weird.
God, Pete. Yeah, I never saw. And in a way, I'm glad I didn't see it because now I see it only in relation to what I lack. I no longer have whether it's youth or now no wrinkles on my face. Whatever it is, it's like it's not as though I have a newfound appreciation for how I look now. It's all things that I no longer have and wish. But I say I'm glad I didn't think that way then. Because I don't know. I think people who know I don't want to generalize about attractive people, but I think people who know they're attractive and kind of carry themselves.
Well, isn't that what I just said to you? I was like, the reason I think comedians love you, obviously you are a comedic actor and performer and a wonderful improviser and all these things. So I'm not excluding you. I'm just saying the weird stand-up community loves you because I think they're resonating with exactly what we're talking about. It's the same with Hamm. It's the same with, there's actually not a lot of, but there's some actors that have the same frequency. And it is, I think it starts with, I have been told that I'm like a leading man kind of look, but I didn't know in junior high. And that's when the die was cast, wasn't it? I
mean, for all of us. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
We're all still wrestling with whatever we did back then. And it's interesting. You mentioned the Mac commercials and how we met is because that was the first time anyone in Hollywood anyway, cast me in that role. I mean, that was basically a leading role. It's sort of how I got Die Hard, which is more of and he's just movies that followed, which were more like leading, quote unquote lead romantic, whatever roles. But prior to that, I had just been, I've been playing a lot of nerdy, goofy parts and
isn't
parts
that
I loved. But,
well, Galaxy Quest, I just watched it for the first time. It's incredible. And I'm like, I hope Justin must feel really glad that he's in this incredible. You're great in it. And you're a key part of it. Like you could never be taken out of some weird Spanish, like TV edit. Like you're a key part of it.
It's funny you say that because I remember hearing that I almost was, that character was almost pretty much like, totally, I think, excised from the movie until Spielberg stepped in.
Steven.
Harris Spielberg. Yeah, Steven Spielberg saw I guess he had seen a cut and I had been removed. And he said, well, I think that character bridges the gap. I mean, like, it adds a human element that not necessarily because of my performance, but it's that character.
No, that's right.
Vital to,
It's one of those notes that I almost get like a weird embarrassed feeling that movie has been so praised exactly for that flock, and that is the correct term, that flock of nerds mm-hmm. that saved the day at the end.
Yeah.
And that the movie is about them and it's a celebration of them, and I think that's why it's been such a cult hit. So the fact that it was almost trimmed, you know what it's like being in the middle of a production. You just might be making some bad choices, and that's when Steven needs to come in.
You have to say his name like that.
Oh my God. There's no way to not be pretentious and be like, and then Spielberg. It's like, I don't mean you were pretentious. I mean, that's why the joke is.
You got to take your foot off the gas a little bit.
Yeah. Or you.
I broke up.
Yeah. I'm back.
Wait, what? My brother and I were just talking about how it's difficult to say because we just directed this our first movie, our first feature. It's really exciting, but
really
in an email to the producers, Christian, my brother, wrote he referenced the movie as a film, and he immediately felt douchey. He said as soon as he referred to it as a film instead of a movie, and it's like there's certain movies that are films, you know, like Paul Thomas Anderson makes films, but yeah. Like the movie we made, we were proud of it. We like it. We think it's good, but you know, there's a lot of fart jokes in it, and it's more of a movie.
That's so funny. I'm immediately the first thing I think is the master, Paul Thomas Anderson, has a fart joke. Is a film. Remember?
Oh no,
Joaquin Phoenix when he's being processed by Phil Hoffman farts. Oh. So don't sell your movie short. It has a great fart joke in it.
I think that's more. I think that's more a compliment to Paul Thomas Anderson that he can get away with it.
I think that's true.
Base stuff in his movies and still have them be films.
Because let's be real, I know what you're talking about. It can be tricky. You can't say my favorite film is Baby's Day Out. You can't. I've tried.
Yeah.
I've tried to do it. Although now that I have a baby, Baby's Day Out is a nightmare horror movie.
Oh, so I bet.
Three men and a baby, they give the baby to the mob and they think the mob is like a babysitting company. And Val and I are like, this is a nightmare. Turn it off. We didn't want to. I do remember how it ends.
That's funny. And they manhandle the baby a little bit. I mean, so to speak, but they like,
they don't look
not supportive of the neck. And yeah,
it's like Baby Yoda. I don't know if you watched The Mandalorian. Get a hand behind that Baby Yoda head. Yes. None of you have been raised on a planet that has infants. They did such a good job of making that baby look realistic.
I know. And then they don't handle it.
And then whenever it was practical, somebody was just running around with it, like holding it by the feet. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Get me Favreau. Get me Favreau.
But those guys must all love you because the Mandalorian's a good example of how they're now using, I mean, forget what Judd did for you, but like, feel like productions now, more mainstream things are using comedians who people are always surprised, can act. Like Amy Sedaris is great.
Right.
In that.
Right.
You know, Bill Burr. I mean, your buddy from Crashing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's his laser gun goes. Which is the official Bill Burr sound. I want a fan recut where his blaster goes. Nah, I'm serious. Which sort of.
You dead? I just texted him. I was like, what should I ask Pete? I told him I was doing your podcast.
Oh, God. Ask him about his fucking friendly face. Ask him when the fuck he's going to let the rage out. Why don't you ask him when he's going to get real and tell me what he fucking hates, that fucking phony?
That's really good.
It got worse. The impression got worse as I tried to think of what he might be saying.
Okay, well, we got to cut this out, but this is really funny. So I go, Bill, I'm doing Pete's podcast. Anything I should bring up / avoid? He goes, talk about...
Oh my God! I'm already like we can't remove this.
Well, I kind of want to just show you and have you read it, but I'll try.
Okay, go ahead. Let's just say his suggestion was the worst thing.
Yes,
and it had nothing to do with me. If it was a burn on me, it would be in the podcast. But it's just talk about blah, blah, the worst things possible.
Talk about the things that you can't talk about.
Right. That is that.
It's funny only because it's so ridiculous. I mean, it's not ridiculous that you can't talk about it, but it's just such a horrific thing that you shouldn't talk about.
Of course. Well, that actually just sort of makes, this is what I'm realizing, what I'm missing in the quarantine is that not just off color or inappropriate jokes, but the frequency that comedians establish, comedians and other creative comedic performers can create, which is like, you can sort of say anything. I mean,
yeah.
Moshe Kashrin and I he's so good on, he made me laugh so hard making fun of Lithuania's sort of lack of resistance to Hitler. I can't even, that's all I can, I'll just give you the category, but he's a very proud Jewish person. So it's like, if anybody's going to blow the whistle, it would be him. And he went so hard at it and it was not appropriate for anything. And I just wept with laughter in that roast that no one could see of me and my Lithuanian.
Well, I've been, last night, Pete, I went down a fun rabbit hole. Does rabbit hole have to be bad?
No, rabbit hole is not bad.
Oh, okay. All right. I went down a Jiminy Glick rabbit hole. I was watching old Jiminy Glick interviews.
That's a great, great hole.
Oh, great.
What do you mean by great hole?
Oh, my Jesus. Oh my Jesus! I'm trying to remember the best one we watched because Val.
Great holes. What's the greatest hole you've ever found yourself in? Eat holes.
Your name has a bit of a hole in it.
But there was one. It reminded me of this because watch the Mel Brooks one. At the end of the Mel Brooks one, and like, they're so great because all these the most brilliant comedic minds like Jack Black, Steve Martin, they're. They're trying not to, they don't want to give in to him. You know, they don't want to give up the bit and laugh. So it's so, part of the fun is just watching these geniuses like try to keep it together. Because like, Martin Short is so much more of, I mean, he's just like in his own category.
Well, I'm trying to, maybe you watched it. There was one, when he does Ice Cube.
Oh.
You watch Ice Cube?
Yes, yeah.
Ice Cube.
He keeps getting his name wrong.
He calls him Ice-T, I think, or he calls him Cube.
Yeah.
Now, why because you're so hard and cold? Is that why? Because you seem sort of warm to me.
but Pete, the one with Mel Brooks, it reminded me of what you just said about Moshe. It reminded me because at the end of it, he gets him. Mel Brooks loses it when he goes,
Now, Matt, why do you have such a problem with Nazis?
What's my problem with Nazis? And he cracks.
You're so hard on them. You're always going after them.
You know, just reminded me of like, it's even Mel Brooks, I mean, who has his family, the suffering that's gone on, the pain that has been inflicted. That's sort of why I've been lucky enough to not suffer even remotely like that. But I think that's why you have to be able to laugh at that shit.
I'm going to give the, I can't compare my pain to that pain. I have no direct tie to it. So let's put that aside. I'm just going to talk about pain in general. When people make fun of the pain that I've been through, I remember Kumail did my roast when I was 30 and he said, "Hey Pete, your ex-wife called," and everyone laughed. And he went, "Just kidding. She's too busy with the new baby." And I fell out of my chair. And it wasn't a show laugh. It wasn't like, I'll be a good sport.
Yeah.
It was the purest. And that's what's fun, I think, about roasts, there can be, it's letting everyone in on like, this is how, without like, there's so many things we're not supposed to talk about because they're too painful. And sometimes, if done artfully, joking about them. And we're back to you saying, "I'm lumbering." Dude, when I was in college, I have a very vivid memory. All my friends were girls. I'm just one of those girls guys. Mm-hmm. And we went to the mall.
Yeah, he's always hanging out with chicks. How is Wilson? He's always got, he's like a gaggle of hens.
The times I've hung out with Bill and we've like smoked a cigar or something.
Oh, I'd love to be there. Fuck.
It's super, it's just like a show, to be honest. Yeah. It's just like watching a show. But like, I'm sure he's going, "I get the feeling this guy's a chick guy."
Yeah.
He's pulling on that cigar a little bit too much, like the straw of a frappuccino.
Not a guy you want to watch sports with, if you know what I mean.
That's exactly who I am. I'm waiting for the commercials. I can't.
Well, that's why your stuff. That's why your stuff in Crashing with Him is so good, because you represent two such disparate points of view. It's great to watch. I like that. Who all likes each other?
I really have to give credit to Judd on that one, because it was his idea to pair me with like disparate flavors, like kind of like tough guys. I would write all these scripts for like me and Mulaney, which we eventually did, but like me and Hannibal. And he was like, no, I really want to see Pete when he's with like somebody that's sort of like not his speed.
That is really good.
I was gonna say, your internet must have dropped out, because I'm like, I know you love impressions, and I know.
Oh, good. Oh man, nasally quality. What there?
Yeah, it's a little bit. Well, when I've done it too,
goes in the lower. He ends sentences with a bit like lower than he starts them.
That I have to say, Bill Hader does that when he does Judd, and that's totally where I got that. Because he noticed that he goes like,
well, he listening to Judd, it reminded me so much of the cadence that I think I had just seen Superbad, not for the first time, but I just rewatched it, and they all, Judd has this thing that Seth has, which is sort of a definitive, they land their sentences, you know, they land there's a way they land their points that's like very definitive,
yeah,
and declarative almost, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Well, maybe we should just go and get some weed.
Yeah go and get weed. It's almost like weed, and they relish the certain words. Like Judd does a thing where he's like, yeah, well, if I as long as I don't smoke too much weed. You know, yeah. they kind of enunciate the key word in their sentences. I don't know how
that's no. I know what you mean, because when I saw again, I had been doing it for a while, and then I saw Hader do it, and it was so much better. And what he noticed was what you noticed, which is, and this is Bill's. He goes, I just like that you have that kind of gear.
Yeah.
He'll go down and land the word gear.
Yeah,
I like that you have that kind of
gear. This is such a good point about Hader that you and like maybe and like a handful of other people would appreciate that. I'm sure most of your listening audience won't. It might be alienating, but I have such a specific thought that you just triggered about Hader, which is I admire him so much, and I'm ashamed that occasionally I have I get upset that he is so much better at impressions, because I really like pride myself on certain impressions. And
yes.
And you said something that I've experienced with Bill multiple times, which is you're proud of an impression that you do. It's like maybe one of your go-to. It's like your ace in the hole, you know. Fucking Bill comes along and he's like, oh, and in a very humble kind of way, oh yeah, I do that too, you know. And he does one that destroys yours.
Yes. It's
like the ultimate impression of whoever.
That's why people of our ilk, of our skill level, need to stay with each other. Because when Bill walks over, because when you and I met, so to finish that anecdote, they tape 30 Apple commercials, and then Steve Jobs would pick the five that would air. That's how much money they threw at that campaign.
You're right. He would pick out of, and it was all up to him. I mean, I don't know if we told you this, that he wouldn't even read the scripts beforehand.
He just wanted to see it on its feet.
He wanted to see it all cut.
And then I was in one of the ones that got cut. And then it wasn't that big of a disappointment, but it was disappointing. I was basically in the foreground as a reporter yelling questions to you.
Yes.
And I was like, I just sort of knew this one's not going to go. This isn't that fun. And it did not. But the reason I bring it up is the reason why the day was still such a big success and so fun for me was that in between you and I bonded first and foremost over doing Pacino.
Oh, yeah.
Which became, huge Pacino because I'm huge. So
great Pacino. Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny, Pete. That's right. I forgot that. I just saw Heat 2 nights ago.
Oh my God.
The whole thing. I was like, oh, it's 8 o'clock. I'm by myself in my place up on this in like, it's kind of rural. I don't know why I have to paint that picture, but I was like a little stoned, and I was like, I just kind of want something that I haven't seen in a while. I got this nice screen. What's a movie I haven't seen? Heat. I forgot that Heat is like 4 hours. Have you seen it? And it keeps going and going. And it's but I also forgot how good it is. You know, I forgot like, and I think specifically we did that scene. You did that scene with Hank Azaria, right?
The great ass scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great ass. Yeah. I just remember, I like people that want to play. I especially if somebody can set aside their special status. So here I am feeling like I don't want to intrude, but you were giving me silly vibes and then I'm being silly.
Oh,
and, you know how a set is, of course, there's so much time to kill.
Yeah.
So I don't know when it happened, but at some point either you or I just start going like, all train compartments smell vaguely of shit. And then we're off.
Oh, it's the best. Cause I love, but also I would say, I have to say, Bill does the same thing. Bill, as much status as he has, and anytime I've been around him, for the most part, it's been like his sets, you know, like Judd would have me come and do, Judd used to do like a DVD day where he would just have people do bits or like things that he knew were going to be outtakes.
From Knocked Up. I love your Knocked Up take.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we did. He would bring me in for that stuff. And so I was always on Bill's kind of whatever. And he on his turf, if you can call that. And he was always very deferent. He's good at that, at making you feel comfortable. And like, he's not the you know, alpha comedian. But I just remember you being there and like loving having a guy around that I could like just do the dumb bits with him.
It's it made the day go fast, right?
Totally. And
it's a long day.
It's a long, those days were long, but also you mentioned that like there's so much downtime, but with a job like that, most of the downtime, it wasn't even like you got to interact with the crew that were like moving stuff around or like switching scenes. Like there wasn't that much to rehearse. Certainly. It was all that same white background, and the downtime would mostly be the executives trying to figure out what else they wanted, because I don't think anybody was in direct contact with Steve Jobs, so it was a lot of
guessing.
I think that's what it was, and so it was usually me and John, and then it was so fun then to get somebody like you, and we had the some really great in addition to you, we had, you know, Zach Galifianakis and Paul F. Tompkins, like these really people that I admired and thought were really funny would come in. And I would say, you know, don't feel bad that your thing didn't get cut, because I remember thinking the funniest ones never made it to air, like fun ones. And I said this recently and it got taken out of context, so I got to be careful about how I say it. It made me sound really like douchey, but I had heard, I asked one of the executives once why that was at a rap party when they were, you know, a little liquored up and truthful. I said, why do all these funny, you know, I'm sure I referenced yours and cause I'm a fan of people like you they said, oh, well, Steve Jobs doesn't like if they're too funny, that the comedy detracts from the point of the commercial.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting that I get it.
I mean, yeah. Looking at Apple products, this is a guy that was like, you don't want too much flash or color necessarily. I'm looking at my laptop right now and it's just that space metal gray. That's just like, you know, even when they're fun, they're kind of simple.
Simple.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Simple. You shouldn't have to be distracted by anything to get to the point of the thing. Even if that distraction is funny, is comedy.
Wow. Did you?
I think, yes. I mean, again, like I said that recently, and I think that the context in which it was reprinted or whatever was, they were too funny for Steve Jobs. You know, like, I don't know. It made me sound self-aggrandizing or something.
People are so desperate for something to make something sound mean. I know. I think that's fascinating because obviously this is one of the most fascinating people that's of the past 100 years. And a little like to just, okay, so I did the E-Trade commercials, right? The baby, the talking baby. And the reason they stopped, I think, and I don't want to get taken out of context here, but I think it was that it was super funny and super beloved, but they weren't seeing enough people going, that made me laugh, I'm going to now sign up for E-Trade. So that's sort of to Steve's point. It's like, are we here to entertain or do we want to like lull them into a state of curiosity?
And that's, I think that was the real genius of that campaign. It was that there was such a clarity to it. It was, and the clarity is really like, if you reduce it to its essence, it's I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Which is like a really unlikable thing to play. It's an unlikable, it's a difficult thing to convey in any sort of charming, like likable way. Is that, but that was the point of those commercials. And I remember I was always kind of bristled at leaning into that too heavily. Like I always felt really uncomfortable whenever, like I remember the first round of those that we did the first day, the only note that the executives kept giving Phil Morrison, who was the director, a great director. I love Phil and he has a very sensitive touch. He made that movie Junebug and he's a very like funny, sensitive person. But Phil was at, you know, of course, the mercy of the Apple people. So they kept saying, whenever I'd introduce myself, hello, I'm a Mac, they wanted me to go, hello, I'm a Mac, proudly. You know, like proudly, like declarative. I'm a, this is who I am. Hello, I'm a Mac.
Wow.
Yeah. And I couldn't do it. I it was the one thing. And it's not like I take direction. I love taking direction. I love, you know, putting myself in the hands of a director. And that to me is part of the fun and the process. But there was something about this that I was so afraid of. Just give us one. You know, it was that. It was like, you know, and Phil would be like, look, I know. I like what you're doing. This is, to me, it's more accessible. It's more human. But they need one. And I mean, I shouldn't brag about this because, you know, really it's me not taking a note. And following the directions of a boss. But I never do things like this. I'm always like, whatever you want. You know, I'm a very pliable person.
Yeah,
But I didn't. And I'm so glad I didn't. And then, of course, after that, they were like, once something works and they see that it makes money or it's effective, whatever, they never encouraged me to do that again. But I just think sometimes about...
Oh, my God.
I think it was selfish, Pete, because I didn't want to be... I was so paranoid about being like a spokesperson or a pitch person, you know, like, hey, this is, I don't know.
Well, so, it would have ruined it. I'm not just saying that to agree with you. It would have ruined it. Let's do one now the way that you think they wanted to do it.
Hey, I'm a Mac. Hey, I'm a Mac.
And you know? I'm a PC.
PC? What the heck are you doing?
I'm trying to print these documents, but they're in different formats, so they're all over the place, and I just sharded.
Well, you should get the program I have. It comes on every Mac. It's much better. I'm much better than you.
It comes included? Mine is a $44.99 upcharge and a 12-hour download.
Oh, PC, what are we going to do with you, you fucking asshole?
I love it. You know, it's interesting what all, that campaign also did was, and this isn't, hey, what are you, you're on the record to talk about this. I think it's interesting that I'm choppy, aren't I?
Pete, I'm so sorry.
It's all good, man.
I'm so sorry, but I when you froze, I took a photo I'm going to send you. It's really funny because you froze right when you were like, you know, it's really interesting. But I'll send it to you. You'll get a kick out of it.
I just said though to Katie, and we can include this, I was like, we're losing the internet a lot, but I was like, at least it's with a great guest, we're having great rapport, and we can keep picking it back up. It's a real compliment to you. I was just gonna say, as a topic of interest, that didn't that campaign also sort of drive home the idea that's behind most marketing, which is you are your products. I mean, like, it was just like, can we just tell them that they are their products? Which I think that idea pre-existed Mac and PC. Like Mac had that reputation and then they leaned into it. But it still happens now. If somebody's like an Android person, doesn't that sort of tell you a little bit about their personality? Which, of course, isn't really true at our deepest levels, but it's sort of the game of advertising.
And the scary thing is it may be becoming more true. I mean, the more connected we become to technology, certainly, the more an extension of ourselves it becomes. And eventually, I mean, the sci-fi like nightmare version is that we become an extension of them.
Right. You know? And to what degree are we already doing that? I mean, even if PC put out a cheaper, sleeker, faster, more user-friendly thing, it would take a lot of mental work for me to be like, but I'm an artist. I'm a cool guy. And by the way, Justin, please don't think you're the spokesperson for this. It just came to mind.
No. I'm not
holding your feet to the fire on this. It just came up.
Well, what's interesting, Pete, is that I think I have so little personal beyond the commercials. And I know it's maybe weird to even hear that. Well, beyond the commercials, but it's something that you did. You spent years of your life doing. But beyond this job, which I was just thought of as an acting job, beyond that, I don't have that kind of allegiance to Apple as a product, like the way I would say even you do. I mean, that hypothetical that you just presented, you know, I wouldn't have as hard a time using another type of product. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I certainly, as you can see, I don't know nearly as much about computers. I'm not as invested.
In the downtime, I was walking Justin through how to set up a personal hotspot.
And I was like, whoa, this is really cool. I didn't know my Apple computer did this.
You're a Mac and I'm an iPhone, I guess. Well,
it reminds me of a moment when we were doing, when John and who played PC, John and I were doing a spot for the iPhone just came out. And they had given us prototype. They had given us ones to use like a month earlier. And I had been traveling, and I tried to switch my I had to switch carriers in order to use it. And I tried to do that, and it was just like you got to go to that AT&T store or whatever. It was just a pain in the ass. And I was like, I like my flip phone. I like my service. I don't want to like go through the hassle of whatever. I was just lazy. And so we're on set, and we're doing, you know, PC is like a version of what we just did, which is like, hey, what are you doing there, PC? And, I'm trying to figure out how to get the weather on this device. And I'm like, well, you should check out the iPhone. I can do all those things with my app. And I don't think they ever aired this one, but it was where I was explaining to PC what all the things that the iPhone did. And in between takes, John had set his iPhone up. So he was like, he was actually using his, and I was looking at it for the first time, Pete. I had this thing, and I was like, wait a minute, and he's walking me through how to use it, you know, and I'm going, this is amazing. I was like, guys, to the executives in the back, like, hey, do you all have one of these? These are fucking crazy that you can do all this. And I remember thinking, John and I were laughing because A, that he was walking me through how to use it. And B, that it would have been such an effective commercial if they had just run the B-roll on our on the in-between stuff, where I was genuinely like blown away by what.
Wow, that's hilarious. That would, and it, because it's a role reversal too. I mean, that's just perfect.
It would have been really funny if anyone had captured it. But I was like, oh God, I'd love one of these. Myself on this.
But you know what I love about that, and I'm not just saying, is that when the iPhone first came out, I remember the first time I saw one. My ex-wife, now at the time wife, were at a restaurant, and the people next to us had an iPhone, and they had it sitting on the table. Very normal now. I don't know what that was.
Sorry, that was me getting an email. I'm very popular, Pete. I got an email.
Electronic mail?
increase your penis size.
email schlong@gmail.com. I didn't even know there was schlongs. But I saw it, and I remember being like starstruck, and everybody wanted one. I remember a comedian named Tim Young had a bit where he was like, I couldn't get an iPhone, so I just bought white headphones. But that that bit, so you look cool on the train, that bit speaks to how obsessed people were with being like a Mac. Because do you feel that that character sort of ushered in a whole tech hipster thing, right? I mean, it was like...
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think it was happening already. Again, like, I don't want to say it again. I don't know if we talked about this, but I don't have, we did in the sense of like, I didn't have perspective at the time, certainly with something like that. Like I've, you know, now I've had the luxury of being able of time going by and being able to now look back and examine it, knowing what I know now. But I at the time I wasn't aware of it. Certainly I wasn't like, I didn't consider them I didn't think of it as being like a significant campaign or an important, you know, I remember thinking they're on a lot and you know, and in the years following that campaign, I remember seeing similar types of commercials pop up and similar types of like,
I did one. I did one for Die Hard Batteries, and they told us I was the positive terminal. Matt McCarthy was the negative terminal. Oh, and it was just one of the many Apple clones where I was, Die Hard Batteries are great. And the other guy was like, rah, 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 rah. Oh, really? Just, so I was riding years later, that still the wake of the two, the positive person and the negative person.
That that's funny. Yeah. So in retrospect, I guess they were, it made a real mark, but at the time, and I think that about a lot of things in my past, like relationships I've been in where at the time I didn't think of them in a certain way. I just thought of, I was in it. So I just sort of, I didn't have the luxury of being able to, you know, examine it from a more objective perspective, I guess.
I don't know what you mean. You mean because the public picked up on it and had their own story?
Yeah, if it was something, if it was an actress, if it was a public thing, if it was, I mean, some of those relationships I was in were with people that other people cared about.
I see what you're saying. You were not the Mac enthusiast. You were just dating a Mac.
Right.
It was other people.
Right.
Well, dude, I don't know anything about, for like example, for Drew Barrymore, but that is still in the Justin Long story. I don't do a lot of research because I was just excited to talk to you. But if you give you a Goog, people love to just be like, he dated Drew Barrymore. That is like it reminds me of like Jay Moore. He's done all these things, but you still say he was on SNL.
Yes.
You had a relationship that in the public consideration was as being on SNL.
But see, I would think Jay being on SNL is far more in terms of something to talk about or something that you consider a part of your it's something that is for public consumption and is totally like worth talking about. I think that's far more significant and because the way with somebody like Drew, I had such a different relationship with her than anyone could ever, you know, I couldn't begin to explain it or even wouldn't want to even talk about it cherish my, it's nothing like that. I respect her too much. I respect what it was too much to like, I don't know, to like add it to the whatever public fodder is out there about that, about, you know, two people dating each other for a time being. I certainly don't like when it comes up, I don't like bristle at it. I just don't want to, there's nothing, it's not for the public, you know, totally. Which is a weird thing to say, because I know that there were photos and stuff and it's funny though. I never consumed any of that. I never, you know, you can really, certainly back then you could really avoid that stuff. I imagine it's harder now because the social media is such a huge component of life.
Oh, my God. You'd get relatives texting you screen grabs of stories. I mean, that's I've only had a few snafus that like got picked up by the press or whatever. But you can't ignore it. Even if you don't go on Twitter.
Yeah.
Your weird cousin or whoever is going to text the screen grab of like the meanest one and send it to you because you're not even thinking in your case in a relationship. And again, Justin, I know nothing about
even reviews, Pete, even like I would get those out of the paper clipped from my mother's friends would send them to her. She goes, she'd say, oh, I and they weren't necessarily good reviews. I was in their local, you know, I was in the Arizona Star Tribune or whatever.
Yes.
And they got excited, which I get. I like, I'm not belittling that. I would get negative. You know, my mom's the worst about that stuff. She's excited that I'm in the paper at all.
Right.
Well, it's not.
She doesn't see the headline, Drag Me to Hell, Indeed. I use that one because I love Drag Me to Hell. I saw it in the theaters, which is it's the way to see that movie.
It's
a hoot and a scream. Like it's like the most outrageous. It's a romp. I know fucking romp. You should be proud of that one. That one's great.
It's a Looney Tunes. I remember Sam always referencing Looney Tunes. And I didn't quite understand until I saw it what he was talking about. But it's really like a Looney Tunes inspired romp, like you said.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That kind of comedy. The anvil on – I mean, it's – anvils falling on people's head, eyeballs popping out. It's so.
I know the corpse. I don't want to ruin anything, but the stuff that happens with a corpse is just very, very.
Oh, it's so good.
Very funny.
That was a dream job. I saw that movie with Seth Herzog, Herzog. Comedy show, but that was the dream job. I Sam Raimi was, you know, he's one of my heroes, and Alison Lohman was one of my favorite actresses. One of my favorites.
I ask you this? Not about anybody in particular, but do you see yourself as like a married guy? You seem so like I sort of want to see you with kids. I'm sure you get this a lot.
I'd like it.
You've got like dad energy. So I'm just wondering, is that something you see for yourself?
Oh yeah, it's funny, Pete, because I've always I always thought that was for sure what I was going to end up doing, being a dad. And I love kids. I love hanging out with my nephews or I just love kids. I mean, it's funny. I'm like at the age and I'm on the social predicament where like, that's kind of that could potentially be a creepy thing to say. Right. I just love kids.
Right. That's a Bill Burr bit.
Oh, really?
He talks about, again, please note the context. This is stand-up comedy. It's dark. And he goes, he's mad at sexual, you know, I don't know how to say this. Uh-huh. I think he just says perverts or pedophiles or something terrible. But he's like, they ruined it for the rest of us. I love kids. And he's in his 40s and he wants to hug and hold and like, and it's just, it's a very dark. I hear you. You're saying you're sort of getting up to the point where it's like, is this weird?
Well, yeah. And I,
obviously not, by the way.
Well, I've also, been, you know, I think I'm at the point too, where I finally am really realizing how precious time is. Time in the last few years has become, like a heightened commodity, and its value has just like skyrocketed. And so I think that's part of why I'm dragging my feet now is because I think I stayed in the wrong things too long, whether it was my own guilt about leaving and hurting people, whatever it was, or I could psychoanalyze myself, but it was,
Justin, can I just say, I'm the worst. We've had whole podcasts dedicated to the nice guy problem, meaning you think it's mean to break up with somebody, so you never do it. I'm just so
which is meaner.
It's meaner. It's manipulative. Yeah. It's a lie. And that's why I wanted to stop here, because I think we need to share that message that if you're staying with somebody because you want to spare their feelings, that's a manipulation, and it's not
absolutely.
It's not your thing to do. You need to speak your truth.
Well, well said, and I wish I had heard that from somebody.
Me too.
I could have saved not only myself, but like more. For a guilt-ridden, you know, people pleaser. More importantly, like you said, I could have saved the other person.
Yeah,
I could have spared them time. And not to get into like men, women, you know, whether it's more precious for work, but there is a biological, you know, there's a line, I hate quote, this is really, I don't know what this is, but I did this movie called Comet, and I hadn't seen it in years. I rewatched it recently with a friend, but I, there's a line in it where I about Emmy Rossum says, and I'll just paraphrase it. She says, basically, you know, you have to be really certain because to rob time from a woman in her 30s is criminal if you're not going to commit. You know, if that's a precious, it's an even more precious time for whatever I'm feeling now. Women who might want to have kids is like,
right,
you can't do that. I want to be careful. You know, I just
I hear what you're saying, and I know it's a delicate subject, especially because we're both men, but I think it's fair to say you don't see the like aging, like John Voight type having kids later. I don't know why I said John Voight. I don't know if he even did that. But like you don't see the old woman in the same way that you see the old man potentially still having kids later. Yeah. You don't see the David Letterman of, there's no female David Letterman being
Steve
like
Martin.
Yeah. There's no lady Steve Martin being like, I waited till I was 60 to have children. It just
70. It's yeah.
70?
Yeah.
He is a wild and crazy guy. Sorry.
Not that we're celebrating that.
Yeah.
I know. So I want to be, for my sake, for whoever that person, the next person is, for her sake. So but to answer your question, I would love to have kids. I would love it.
You're just bringing me back, and I can't talk about it enough. I think it is important to share that horrible. I think we're similar in that way, that people pleasy and telling somebody anything that they don't want to hear, even if it's the truth, is the worst thing you can do. And it's taken me so long to figure out. I had a therapist that basically coached me through how to break up with somebody. Really good tips. He's like, wow. If they say you're going to regret this, you always concede the point. That was always one of you go, you're right, I might regret this. You don't go, no, I won't, I'm fucking done. You just go, you're absolutely right. You're hurting my feelings. I know, I'm so sorry. I have to tell you